when you're building a company of any kind, if you make great hires, they're going to do everything faster and better than you expected, and they're going to solve more problems than they create. But if you make a poor hire for any reason, they're going to do everything slower and later than you expected, and they're going to create more problems than they solve.
Your network is your net worth. Come listen to some of the most successful people I know. Share invaluable knowledge, stories, and advice in real estate, business, and beyond. This is Weiss Advice. Whether you want to take your business or personal life to the next level, look no further.
Welcome back to another episode of Weiss Advice. I am your host, as always, Yona Weiss, and grateful to be here today, another beautiful day, with Josh Etris, all the way from Tennessee. What is going on, my friend? How are you?
Man, I'm doing great. We're here in Nashville, and it's beautiful here as well. So I love the energy you bring. I'm excited about our time together.
Absolutely. And really, I mentioned, you know, always kind of introduce people, that I'm grateful for people to take the time. And I truly am. And it does not go unnoticed. Obviously, we've tried to record this for a while. I know you've been busy, got a lot going on. And I'd love to hear more about exactly what you are doing, what your background is. But I just want to start off by saying thank you, because you've taught me a lot, believe it or not, over the years of being connected and following on LinkedIn. You provide so much, great inspiration and just food for thought oftentimes, just questions and things that make you kind of think. And I think I'm sure you put a lot of effort into it, and it may seem like effortless, but anyone who's spending time on social media, being, you know, quote unquote, an influencer or someone who's sharing knowledge constantly, there's effort that goes into it. And so I just want to thank you for putting that out there.
I really appreciate that. I'm glad to be able to jump online and share what I'm learning and learn alongside others. It's really the path to wisdom, in my view, is the ability to learn from others and share what you're learning as you go along and pressure test your ideas. So thanks for the kind words.
Yeah, and I totally relate to that. And so many things, you know, you talk about family life, you know, you're a business person. You talk about family, you talk about prayer and devotion and stewardship and all these kind of things that oftentimes get overlooked in the business world, or not focused on, or not given enough of the spotlight. And I think it's important for people to realize that even on LinkedIn, you know, it's like professional networking and things like that. You got to be a person. You got to be real. You relate to who's kind of behind the persona or the profile and things like that. And I think it gives people a lot to relate to. So yeah, awesome. I'd love for you to kind of just give a little bit of background, you know, who you are, how you got started in the real estate world, and what you're working on.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. I certainly have a non-traditional background in commercial real estate. I'll start with my family. I've been married 13 years. I've got 4 children, 3 boys and a daughter. That's a ton of fun, and a lot of time and energy and intentionality goes into that. But I actually spent 6 years in full-time Christian ministry out of college with a group called Campus Outreach, focused on multiplying Christ-like leaders. And that really developed me as someone who could lead people and engage people and interact with a wide range of people on the college campus. And so while my colleagues were getting their MDivs and going into pastoral work, the leadership gave me an opportunity to get my MBA and study business. And that was a gift that they allowed me to do that. And they encouraged that. They put me in a position to pursue that. And so after 6 years of full-time ministry, I actually moved into the tech space. So a fully bootstrapped tech startup company out of Birmingham, Alabama, as the second non-bounding hire. And there's a wild story about how I got there. But when you're in a small company like that, when we started selling the product, they said, oh, Josh, you're also client success. And so I was the client success leader. And then they were like, you're also tech support. And I was tech support. But because the business grew, and it grew quickly, that allowed me the opportunity to lead business development reps, SDRs, account executives, client success leaders, tech support, director of technology, and just serve on the leadership team with that business. That's where I developed my skills as a chief operating officer. So all of the skills required to set the trajectory and lead at a high level developed through that experience. And then I transitioned into commercial real estate 2.5 years ago. And so I know the least about commercial real estate on our entire team, apart from our new hires. Really rely on our team, you know, where my giftings lie are around implementing entrepreneur operating system, leadership management, accountability, intercompany communication, core processes, metrics, scorecards, and then really pushing the vision, mission, values down into the organization. So that's a little bit about me professionally.
Yeah.
And then on a personal level, I love to read. I have a flower garden. I enjoy pickup basketball. I'm interested in a lot of things. And so I found myself being curious about other people's hobbies and just connecting them with them in meaningful ways. So there's the brief bio, and
wow, that's
appreciate
awesome.
You asking.
Yeah, no, it gives a lot of context and really helps our listeners understand. And I think just relate to a person a little more when they have the background, they have the context of what got them to where they are. And obviously we're all on a journey. We're all hopefully learning. If you're listening to this podcast, you're a curious person. You're someone who's wants to learn and continuously learning. So kudos to you for taking the time out to listen to this. And hopefully we'll learn a thing or two together today. But, you know, having that role as that leadership kind of training that you had, and now in a leadership role, I think it's almost a natural kind of flow. I mean, yes, you said there are, you know, colleagues or friends or acquaintances that were going into pastoral work or going into more of the full-time, you know, spiritual leader. But as a business leader or a leader or chief operating officer, someone who's really essentially running a company and a people person, I mean, you're dealing with people all day long. You have the opportunity to kind of to shape lives and to have that influence, positive influence on people in the business world, which essentially is where people spend the majority of their time, you know, and of their day.
That's right.
And a lot of people relate to, whether right or wrong, a lot of people relate to their work or their businesses as like a family of sorts. And if you can be that leader within that and make it feel more like that, you know, it gives people a sense of safety and a sense of security, which, you know, oftentimes gets overlooked. You know, people, they go to a job and they work, and a lot of people dread it. But if you can make it an environment that people love coming to work, love what they do, love the environment that they're in, that's a game changer. And I just want to share one more thing about that, because as you know, I ask at the end of the podcast, and as our listeners know, if you listen to the end, you know, the final four, the first question I ask is, what's the worst job you ever had? And inevitably, a large percentage of people talk about a job that wasn't necessarily the job itself, but was the environment and the people. And I think that is so, so important, especially when you're dealing with, like you said, new hires, people, you know, kids coming out of college or business school or whatever. And this may be their first, you know, or one of their first job experiences. You want to make that a positive place for them.
Yeah. To your earlier point about crafting the family and what that looks like, I'll speak to that. We actually use the language of love in our office. So I actually tell our team, Micah, our CEO, myself, we do love them. We want to see them be successful. We want to see them achieve their dreams and to take meaningful steps personally and professionally. And we use that language. Now, we're really careful with that language. We tell them we are a team first, and we have a goal and a desired outcome. And good and great teams that win championships will often feel like a family, but we're not a family first. We're a team first. And because we're a great team, sometimes it's going to feel like a family, but you don't fire family members, or usually you don't fire family members. And so some people will be there with us when we win the championship or win the playoff games, or we can use any analogy of winning. And some people won't be there, but while they are with us, they can help us move the ball down the field. And I think it's important to give people that distinction, because I've seen people get really hurt when they're like, man, my family, and now I'm being cut off from the family.
Right.
And so I try to make that distinction for them. We do love you, but we're a great team. We have a trajectory. We are going to win. Here's the desired outcome. Mm-hmm. And not everyone will be here for every step of the way, like a sports team or a franchise. And I think that's an important distinction for team members, so that they don't get hurt in such a way that they were like, I thought we were family. And we try to clarify that for them. I think it's been helpful. What about you?
It's a balance. It is a balance. I'm not in a position per se as someone who runs a team. You know, I am definitely part of a team, and I feel like the company I work for, and I work for a relatively large company. I mean, I think overall in the company, overall, there's probably like 500, 600 people or so in the company. Those that I really have a day-to-day, you know, or week to week kind of interaction with is much smaller team, probably like 20, 30 people. But it's not something that I have two people officially that kind of work under me as like assistants and things like that. So I have that kind of relationship. with them and, you know, just trying to provide, you know, give them the support that they need. But it is whenever you're in a position of leadership, and it's almost weird, but like online, you have that as well. Like you're building a community of people, and you may not necessarily have that constant interaction or duality, but there are plenty of people who are watching and are reading and are listening.
That's right.
And are relating, and they may never comment. They may never say anything, but they're watching. And I like to call them, you know, hashtag silent fans. You know, the people that they're, you know, people like to call them lurkers. You know, I hate that word. It just seems like kind of creepy word. People like just kind of scrolling and reading your stuff. But when you have people like, and I get this constantly, just a random message, you know, I've been following your stuff for years. I love it, whatever. Or whenever you're on the call with someone or a client and like, oh, by the way, I love what you're, you know, love all the content you put out there. Like, oh, okay. I would have never known that, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's amazing. Well, you do such a good job with your content, and you built a community where other people are learning how to share and the challenges that you put in place, I think is, I've participated and I've seen other people participate. And I think it's really encouraging to see.
For sure. For sure. Did you kind of stumble on LinkedIn like I did a few years ago? Just like, okay, I'm just going to start sharing stuff and see where this goes.
You know, I think most people, or I'll share my experience as a business development rep, that's how I initially engaged in LinkedIn, because part of my job was to understand who was the ideal customer profile that I needed to be engaging with and speaking with. And as I did that, I began to see some other individuals in my atmosphere or network that were actually using LinkedIn to tell stories and to unpack the journey of their business and do short docuseries about growing their startups. And I started to see the power of creating content and sharing insights as you go along. And so as I began to follow those individuals, then I connected with more individuals who were doing that in unique and powerful ways. And I had this realization that if I truly wanted to impact a million lives in my lifetime, that I would have to do that with a very small group of 3 to 12 people, or I would have to do it in some digital format that delivered it in a much broader way to a much broader audience. So I'd have to do, I would focus on a group of 3 to 12, maybe a larger group, 70 or so that I might have good contact with once a year or once, you know, a quarter. But beyond that, I would have to use a format that could share the story or teachings or training with a much broader audience. So that's how it began. And then once I started writing, it felt like an experiment, like a game,
right?
Almost like this is good for me and it's good for others. And that's how it began for me. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. And I mean, have you actually, and I know people talk about this, and LinkedIn is such an incredible community of people, but have you actually, you know, met people or hired people or things like that through, that you've met through your LinkedIn content itself?
Absolutely. That's one of the primary drivers for me to be on LinkedIn, is that the people that are attracted to the content that I write often are attracted to the vision of our company.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we're building America's most generous commercial real estate company, that's incredibly aspirational. But if I'm talking about generosity, I'm talking about leading at a high level and being intentional and all the things that I talk about, those people tend to be attracted to that. And therefore, when I post a job, for example, we released a new job this past week.
Mm-hmm.
In the first 48 hours, hundreds of applicants.
Yeah.
Now, that's created its own challenges of who's going to sort these, read these, respond to these. And we have a team that's doing that. But yes, multiple times over now, have done business with people via LinkedIn or have met up with people in person in different cities that I've visited to learn from them, and then taking those relationships even a step further. And so I'll give one short example. When I went to Atlanta recently to travel for personal reasons to visit with friends from college, we meet up every year. I handpicked 4 people that I admire in the city of Atlanta who I believe are doing really meaningful and powerful things. And I actually sent them a note and said, I'm making a trip to Atlanta. I have a free day available on Friday. I'm coming in a day earlier. I made a list of 4 people that I admire that I think really highly of, that I would love to learn from. Could I buy you a cup of coffee or connect with you briefly and learn with you and from you while I'm in town?
Yeah.
Well, 3 of the 4 said yes, and the 4th said, I'm out of town, but let's set up a phone call for the future. And cool. I think that's really powerful. And I learned so much from those leaders. They're far more gifted and experienced than I am. And it was a really just enjoyable experience to learn with them. So that gives you a good real life context of how that's played out.
Absolutely. And I've experienced that, you know, as well, many, many times. Anytime I travel to a different city, I do the same thing, really. I just reach out to people like, hey, I'd love to, you know, someone who I admire and just want to connect with online. And bringing, you know, taking those kind of online relationships or kind of acquaintances and bring that to life. I've made lifelong friends from that. Really dear friends. I mean, I just had a birthday recently and got one of the warmest messages from a guy that we connected with 5-6 years ago and have met in person probably a half a dozen times, you know, since then. And it's just like, wow, you know, this person, if they weren't, and we've done business together and we've done, you know, collaborations and things like that as well. Like, it's amazing how just online you meet someone and then you end up becoming very good friends with them. It's incredible.
Well, for anyone listening who wants to attempt this or try this, go for the highest level leader that you can. And if they tell you no, just ask them who they think you should be with. Mm-hmm. And have them pass you down or, you know, share it with someone else and make it easy for them. You know, tell them, hey, I'm happy to jump on a phone call. I would love to hear about your experience doing X, Y, and Z. If you ask someone to mentor you or they, in their mind, they're like, man, I have time to mentor this person. It's such a big ass.
Right, exactly.
But if you say, could you share your experience leading your software company from, you know, 25 million to 50 million and how you dealt with growth amongst the team members during that time, the person now has a crystal clear, yeah, I can share that. And it becomes easy for them. So you know, pave the way, make it easy for people and do it early, even when you don't have a following, even when you don't have a lot of people who know you. I think mm-hmm. I would be unwise to say I don't have the benefit of having a large following and a title that tells people, oh, I should meet with him. But I didn't early in my career. And so it's a long game. It's a 10 or 15 year game of developing and those relationships. And that's just my encouragement. I'm sure you've seen that as well. When you first started on LinkedIn, you know, your influence likely was much smaller and, sure. and that's okay.
Absolutely. And the people that I had admired or looked up to or, you know, wanted to learn from were, you know, seemingly, wow, this person, you know, is like much bigger, kind of put them on a pedestal a little bit. But when you get to it, it's down to earth, you get to meet people and you take that offline. You know, the yeah. conversations, the DMs are a great place to start. And then, you know, have a phone call. Never really ask anything big. And one of the things that I have a little secret out there, not so much a secret, but something that I think is extremely beneficial is having a podcast, right? Like me, I have an opportunity to just reach out to anyone and everyone that I admire and look up to and feel is someone successful that I'd like to learn from and just offer them an opportunity to share their story and have a conversation that we'll record and put out there for our listeners. But essentially it's you know, it's me wanting to get to know someone else and providing them that platform to do so. So I'm, you know, in a way giving, right? Because I'm giving the platform, I'm giving the opportunity, right? This is going to be shared. Thousands of people are going to see this, et cetera. But at the same time, I'm gaining a tremendous amount by just having that conversation, developing that relationship further. So you may not have a podcast out there, but it's a great way to do that.
That's right. You have a strong because, meaning when you reach out, you have a reason to reach out. You have a because, mm-hmm. because I'd love to have you on the podcast, because I've seen your work doing X, Y, and Z, I thought of you and wanted to invite you on the podcast. And for anyone who's in any type of work that requires influence or persuasion, there's a famous book or a highly recognized book called Influence that talks about having a strong because or actually using the framework of because X, Y, Z. It just gives you a quick inroad. So you do it extremely well and well done on building your network and starting a podcast. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. It really is. I'm curious to know, just kind of transition a drop because you are in the commercial real estate space. I know you guys focus on hospitality a lot in terms of, you know, hotels and conversions and redevelopments and development projects and things like that. What have you learned from the actual real estate world or the commercial real estate space? Because, I mean, in your position, I mean, you could essentially be working for any type of company, right? In what you do, like you said, the leadership skills that you have, the training, the people skills as a COO. But, you know, what is it, if anything, about commercial real estate or hospitality space, if there is anything that you've learned or that is something that kind of stands out?
That's a great question. I will share, if anyone can actually see this video, I'm in a 115-year-old church that has been converted into a hotel in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm in the podcast booth. This stained glass window behind me, if people can't see it, it is just the most beautiful stained glass window you can possibly imagine. And so it's fun to be in a space where you take something old, take something that's run down, that's falling in on itself, and you redeem it. That is incredibly exciting. So the idea that real estate is not only purely creation oriented, so you have people doing ground up developments, but it's actually redeeming something that's been broken or been lost, is very, very compelling. Now, what have I learned in real estate? Things are incredibly simple and yet incredibly complex.
Right.
You know, the fundamentals of real estate are going to be A, B, C, D, E. Get these right, right? Buy at the right basis. Understand your interest rates. Don't, you know, over leverage or under leverage. You can kind of walk through what are the fundamental concepts. Yet at the same time, when you're redeveloping, you're going to run into incredibly complex issues related to plumbing and roofing and grease traps and tenants and leases. And so the ability to distill the basic components of real estate into the fundamentals and then apply it in very complex spaces has been a huge learning curve and something I've really enjoyed. The second thing is, I think a lot of people are intimidated by real estate who don't know real estate. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. I had the mentality that I have to be the fool before I become the master. When I came in, I told people day one, I don't have a real estate background. Can you teach this to me like I'm an 8-year-old? And when I talk to vendors, roofers, when I talk to, you know, true experts in their domain as we're redeveloping projects or working with the city, or I would let them know that on the front end. I would never come in and try to act as if I knew the answers or if I was aware. I would say, hey, would you be willing to teach me? Or I'd love your advice. And people love giving you advice and they love to teach and they love to share about themselves. And so that is something that has been both a learning that I've carried forward from my past experience, my past work. So those are a couple of key learnings. And the third one, again, it's not so much real estate related as it is when you're building a company of any kind. If you make great hires, they're going to do everything faster and better than you expected, and they're going to solve more problems than they create. But if you make a poor hire for any reason, they're going to do everything slower and later than you expected, and they're going to create more problems than they solve. And the way we've really grown and developed Anchor in the last 2.5 years has been increasing the standard of excellence for every hire that we make, so that people who joined our team 3 years ago now are saying, I would have never been hired with our current standards.
Wow. Nah.
But they've grown
into that probably, right?
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. And so that's been a new learning or a new approach that within real estate itself, you know, a property is a property is a property. And certainly there's nuances to different verticals and different sectors and different, but at the same time, if you apply the same principles, then, you know, you can actually adjust your approach, but the principles remain the same. So principles are many, applications are many, principles are few, applications change, but principles never do. And you get a few core principles and then you can adjust your application accordingly by the project, you know, by the team member, by the vendor, and go from there.
Wow. What are some of the things that, I mean, you talk about building that kind of culture and having that higher standard for new hires. I mean, what are some of the things that you do to encourage people to grow within the company? I mean, do you have recommended, you know, reading lists or things like that, that people can become, you know, who you want them to become in that way? Or, I mean, you have team building workshops. I mean,
yeah.
Imagine I'm a new hire and I'm coming in and you're like, hey, Yona,
okay,
we want to bring you on, but here's what you need to do.
I actually think it starts when you make the job offer, and it actually starts when you have your first conversation with them. But when we make the job offer, we do something called celebrate, champion, and challenge. So we actually celebrate all the things we've seen them do in their career prior to this point. Actual outcomes, actual things they've done. And then we champion who they are. Yona, you are somebody who is incredibly gifted at building relationships. Yona, you are and you start to name who they are, you champion, and then you challenge them to take the position and you tell them, we have incredibly high expectations for you. We know that you can meet them. So we have high expectations for you. We know that you can meet them. At times you will fail, but we'll be there to support you. And we tell them that in the job offer, we tell them that when we make the offer, and we build that in from day one, is that we do have high expectations. Their very first week, I meet with every new hire. And the first thing I tell them is, I'm going to treat you today like the leader I expect you to be 3 years from today. Mm. And that's going to be challenging for you. But it's also going to be the fastest path for your growth and development. Because when people hold you to a high standard, people rise to the level of expectations you have for them. And I think it sets the tone. Now, I tell them, I said, no matter what you want to do in your career, if you treat this job like the best and last job you'll ever have, you'll end up where you want to be in your career. I'm not telling you this will be the best job you ever had or the last job you ever had. But if you treat it like the best and last job you'll ever have, then you'll move forward in your career. And I walk them through four or five key frameworks for what they should expect from anchor leadership, so they know what to expect from us. And then I share with them what we expect from them. After that, weekly or biweekly one-on-ones, right? Recommended readings for each department based on what role they're in. So you have all company readings, and then you have department level readings based on what role they're in. You have ongoing development where every Monday we actually do a leadership insight, or we call it an anchor insight, every Monday morning meeting around one core leadership concept, 4 to 5 minutes, small discussion with the 25 to 30 team members. And so you layer it in, both formal and informal. If it's all formal, you missed the mark. So if you just say, come to our 3-day training,
right?
People get in, they're excited, they're fired up, and then they leave. They're like, what do I do now?
Right.
It's like, you just lose the momentum. If it's all informal, come to my house for fire pit night, or let's have dinner as a team, then you missed the mark. You have to blend them appropriately. And those are just a few of the things we do and how we built a culture that's a best place to work in Nashville, Tennessee, fairly rapidly. And I give credit to our team. They've bought in. They've had to say, we're on board. Mm-hmm. We're willing. We're ready to do it. And that gives you a few frameworks that I've seen be successful in my experience.
Absolutely. One thing just kind of stood out to me that you said there more than anything, which is kind of treating people like you would expect them to be a few years from now and kind of seeing their potential. And allowing, when you expect a lot from people, but you also, you know, treat them with, you know, obviously the dignity of where they are at now, but you allow them to see themselves in a bigger, a higher place. I mean, I think it's great parenting advice in general as well. I mean, as a father myself, it's, and I have 6 kids, it's something that, you know, I try to do on a daily basis, is just saying, you know, hey, this is, you know, yeah, you're going through a hard time right now. This is a challenge, but hey, where do you want to be? What do you want to be? Like, can we get through? Let's look in the bigger picture and kind of see ourselves beyond the moment and beyond the action.
Well, Yona, I'm glad that you shared that about parenting, because good parenting is just good leadership. Mm-hmm. And Angela Duckworth wrote a book called Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. And in that book, she actually lays out something called the Wise Parenting Grid. And that grid is the parents who actually draw out the most from their children. They not only show incredible degrees of care and concern for their children, so in terms of their, to know them and to experience them and understand their heart and their life and to truly know them, but they also have very high demands. Now think of demands in the most positive sense. They have high expectations for them. Well, if you pull individuals and say, who was the best boss you ever had, or who was the best leader you ever had, or who'd you experience? Typically, they're going to share about somebody who had a deep care and concern for them as an individual, as a human, and at the same time had incredibly strict standards, or strict maybe too strong. They had very high standards. They believed in them and held them to a level of accountability and results and outcomes that mattered. And that's actually called wise leadership. The other 4 quadrants, it's authoritative. That isn't going to work, right? That's not going to work, right? You have the form of leadership that shows up in terms of passive leadership. Just, hey, not engaged. So you have passive, you have authoritarian, right? And then you have fully detached leaders that it doesn't work at all. They neither care for you, nor do they have standards.
Right.
You know, that's a non-starter. And so you're spot on that in terms of wise leadership, grit, power, passion, perseverance, and you nailed it.
Yeah. It's so important. And whether you're a parent or not out there listening, these are leadership skills that we have in really any relationship that you have, whether it's with an employee or a coworker or someone you hire, you know, I don't know, a housekeeper or a gardener, or I don't know, whatever it is, like someone, or even someone at the coffee shop, you know, the barista, you have these relationships, you can have a tremendous influence on someone just by showing them respect and showing them that they are much greater than they may even perceive themselves. And I think that just comes across oftentimes in how we engage, even in a, like I said, just a small comment or a conversation or something. It can really change a person's day or life in a lot of ways. You have no idea. You never know what one kind word can have an influence on someone.
Earlier in my life, to carry your thought forward, before I became a Christian, which radically altered my life, the way I viewed other people was broken. So my mindset for other people was, you can do better. Like, you can just do better with your life. Like, what are you doing? Like, do better. What shifted for me and made a huge shift in how I engage and lead and develop others was not that you can do better, but that there's more for you. There's more for you in life. And that shift altered how I believe the vast majority of people experience my leadership. And it makes a huge difference. As you can only imagine, they're similar in terms of you can do better and there's more for you, but the delivery and how people experience it is radically different. And I think it's just so important for me to have that mindset with anyone I'm leading, that, hey, there's more for you in life and I'm excited to help you get there. It's not about me. It's about you. It's really not about Anchor. As much as we have a team over self mentality, it's about you. And I think that holds a lot of weight with people. And I've found that people respond extremely well to that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Josh, I would love to just keep this conversation going for hours on end, which I'm sure we could. And
maybe we will one day.
Yeah, no, looking forward to one day visiting Nashville, because you're going to be one of the people I'm going to look up to have that coffee with. But I do want to transition now to what we call the final four. And these are four questions I like to ask all my guests. The first one for you is, what's the worst job that you ever had?
I've had some really terrible jobs. My dad worked in construction, and a lot of, he had our family and our kids working at a very early age. However, the worst job was my freshman year in college. I handled all of the trash in the bathrooms for 9 floors of college freshmen. And so that was just a really dirty job. And it was nasty. I mean, I literally had a pair of jeans, a pair of gloves, and a hoodie that I put in a trash bag each week. Like, afterwards, I'd wash it, put it in a trash bag, and then I'd go do this for hours. And I'd do it every Friday night and every Sunday. And that's just a gross job.
That's gross.
Physically demanding, a bunch of, you know, you can only imagine 9 floors of 18-year-olds and their trash
right.
in bathrooms. So yeah, that's the worst job I ever had, but it paid the bills and I needed the money.
Yeah, that doesn't sound so good. But yeah, you know, we all have those things, which is why I asked the question. It's a very curious question. But second question, what is a book you've read that's given you a paradigm shift?
There's a lot, but I'll pick one. I'm going to go with The Power of Moments by Chip and Dan Heath, and The Power of Being Unreasonable. And the idea that very few memories you have with your children or your family or your team at work came out of, you know what, let's be as reasonable as possible here. And that shift altered the way I think about family trips, the way I think about engaging my team, the way just recently, one of our team members, who's an intern, has a kite club at Belmont here in Nashville. He started the kite club during COVID and he was telling us all about it. And so I went to Costco and I bought every single person on our team the biggest 6-foot dragon kite you could imagine and brought them into the office. And people were like, this is amazing. You know, grown people, grown adults are out there flying kites. And it's like that might have cost us $150 or $300. I mean, but to support our intern and support the team, a lot of times I'm like, what is the unreasonable thing to do here? Go do it. Now, not unwise, unreasonable. Right. So yeah, that book shifted my mindset.
That's incredible. That's very thought-provoking. I'm going to check that out. We'll put that in the show notes for anyone else to check out that book. Third question is, what is a skill or talent that you would like to learn?
I would love to speak multiple languages, primarily because it would just open up a world of relationships I don't currently have. Mm-hmm. And the fastest path to do that is via ultra learning or moving to Spain for 3 months and refusing to speak English. Mm-hmm. However, my life circumstances at this stage don't allow me to country hop and learn languages. And so I would love to do that primarily because the world of relationships opens up significantly.
Sure. Yeah. And not surprisingly, it's a very common answer to this question. A lot of people want to learn a new language because it does. It opens up really opportunities, relationships, cultures that you would never really have a part of. Because I think a lot of language is in the culture. Because you can study something online or in a book or whatever, but really speaking a language in the place with the people, there's nothing that compares to that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, great question.
And fourth and final question is, what does success mean to you?
This is a great question. I'll share what it means to me today. I don't think it will change. However, it could. For me, I've built a one-page strategic plan for my life. It's very loosely held, though. At the very top, when I think about my personal vision for my life, I tell others when they ask me this question, it's to exhaust myself for the cause of Christ and to go out and multiply my life 30-fold, 60-fold, and 100-fold to the degree that God would allow that to happen in my life. And so my goal is to be a really good steward and to take what I've been given and be fruitful and multiply. Number one, I want to be fruitful and multiply. Number two, I want to love God with all my heart, mind, soul, and strength, and to love my neighbor as myself. And number three, I want to go therefore and make disciples. That's how I think about my life. So what does it mean for me to exhaust myself for the cause of Christ? That doesn't mean I don't take a weekly Sabbath or 24 hours of rest. It just means that I am living out of overflow with a focus on others to serve and not be served. And that's what it means to me right now. And if I do that in my family, if I do that in my work, I do that in my community, I have a really hard time seeing a place where I could lose, even if I had very little money or very little influence or very little resources. I would still be winning and still be successful if I was able to do those things.
Sure. And that's a very powerful kind of mindset shift and a powerful definition of what success means. And being other focused is, I think, probably, in my opinion, one of the biggest definitions of success, because you can really, like you said, you can really never lose. It's a win-win in a lot of ways. I mean, oftentimes you can, you know, sometimes neglect yourself, which is probably the biggest pitfall in doing that. But with the right focus and the right having objectivity and having people, relationships that can kind of keep you afloat and keep you at bay, that's really important part of that. But I love that definition.
That's right. And I would never recommend someone be a pushover or get run over or be abused or be, because that's unwise, right? But you know, the idea that you can give too much. Yeah, in theory you could, but even that at times is done out of selfish reasons, right? Meaning I need this person to need me. I need this person to want me. Even that at times is not actually truly others focused. It's some desire internally that's still self-focused, even though it looks like it's other focused to the outside world. So yeah, I'm not recommending people be a pushover.
100%. Absolutely. Well, Josh, this has really been a pleasure. Like I said before, I truly mean it. I'd love to keep this going. And I hope we do. But where can our listeners find you or reach out to you if they want to?
You know, earlier in my career, I actually gave my phone number out directly on podcast and told people to call me. You'd be shocked at how few people would do that. I'm not doing that now. I've since learned that it's better to say, you can find me on LinkedIn, Josh Etrus. I am on Twitter. I don't use it as often. However, you can find me on Twitter. Those two are going to be the easiest ways to connect with me at this point. So yeah, Josh Etrus on LinkedIn or at Josh Etrus, E-T-R-E-S-S on Twitter. Thankfully, early in life, I got every single handle I could that was just my name. That was a good decision, you know, 10 years ago. So So yeah, that's where people can find me. And please don't hesitate to send me an audio message, you know, write me a note, reach out to me. If I can help you, I will. And if I can't, I'll actually tell you that because of my commitment to my family, my four kids, Anchor, and my community. I let people know there are many times where I can't, but I do want to help as much as I can.
100%. And there's so much we can all do out there. But no, thank you for that. We'll make sure to put that in the show notes for anyone who wants to reach out. And thank you again. It's really been a pleasure.
Yeah, this is really fun. You're a great podcast host. You ask great questions, super engaging, and keep it up.
Awesome. Thank you. And thank you to our listeners. You guys are awesome. We couldn't do this without you. Well, we could technically, but then, you know, it would just kind of be weird just recording a conversation with someone. But you guys are awesome. Thank you again for listening all the way to the end. And remember, until next time, the best advice comes only when you ask. Real quick, I have one question for you. Did you like this episode? If you did, I want to ask you a huge favor. See, the biggest thing that helps this podcast grow and that will spread this message to the whole world is that if you leave a review, a rating, and subscribe to the podcast. What that does is it basically tells the platforms that this podcast is out on is that you like my stuff and I'm doing something right. So take a few seconds out of your day, hit that subscribe button, leave a rating or review. I would be extremely grateful. Also, I want to hear from you guys. So I want to hear some feedback. If you have any questions for future episodes, please find me on LinkedIn. Send me a DM, connection request, Yona Weiss, and I'd love to hear from you.